And it's a two-day event that actually technically starts with a parade at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Then they have events going on all night till 10 o'clock. And then it starts again on Sunday with the 1 o'clock Out of This World UFO Hot Dog Eating Contest. I believe they have the big car show that day. And we have the Kecksburg, we have the conference, the free conference, from 1:30 to 5. And they have a nice area set up now, a nice building where we can have our talks. And it's a lot more room we had before. And we'll have, there's going to be a lot of UFO researchers having displays there as well.
And you know, this story is, you've been living with it for decades now. But it makes you wonder, didn't they try to say it was a Russian satellite at one time?
Well, there's been many, many different theories that have been proposed.
I mean, maybe they come, there are no shortage of cover-up stories.
Well, there's all kinds of stories. And, I mean, the official government explanation next day was it was just a meteor, that nothing was found at all. I mean, there's a great deal of information which highly suggests that the government did recover this thing and we know where it was taken to. One of the first theories that came up was Cosmos 96, which was a Soviet Venus probe, which had technical difficulties and re-entered the Earth's atmosphere. Coincidentally, the same date, the same morning, about 3:18 a.m. in the morning, according to the U.S. Space Command in Canada. This happened about 4:47 in the afternoon. And in more recent years, there's been more data on this, which pretty much rules out Cosmos 96 having any connection to this. And there's been many, many theories. I've had numerous people over the years contact me who said that they knew positively what it was. And, of course, when you go down and you try to get some evidence, you know, give me some proof, it all comes down to hearsay. And those range from a Soviet satellite to a Soviet ICBM to a man that told me he knew positively it was some type of projectile that was fired from a giant railroad gun in Canada into the United States. You know, in recent years now, there's TV shows out talking about this alleged Nazi time machine, the Bell, that some people try to connect with it. But, yeah, there are so many unanswered questions, and a lot of what we hear out there just doesn't fit with what we know. And whatever the thing was, though, apparently it was great interest to the government and our military for them to respond as quickly as they did.
Have you, in your investigations over the years, run across other government cover-ups there in Pennsylvania on UFO landings?
Oh, you know, I've been... Well, Jerry, you know, it'll be 53 years I've been doing this October. And, you know, in all the years I've been doing this, I've never personally seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself. I've interviewed thousands of people. I've seen a lot of evidence over the years, different cases where we are conducting on-scene investigations. I've been out in the field actually doing investigations since 1965 after the Kecksburg case. And I've worked on some amazing UFO reports, and there's been some really intriguing cases even in recent days and weeks in Pennsylvania. It goes on constantly. Strange creature reports, UFO cases, and there have been some really interesting events and cases. In fact, my two books, Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook, and Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, they both have cases that I've been involved in over the years, which shows that in some events that there was at least some government interest in whatever was going on with these particular cases. And with the Kecksburg case, I have no doubt that there was that the government knows far more about it than they told the public. And there's some very interesting aspects of the case as well. Like I said, we could talk for days and days just about the Kecksburg case. And the Bigfoot phenomenon is something that's very, very active in Pennsylvania. I have spent years and years investigating hundreds of Bigfoot cases, and, you know, I found some very interesting, very unusual events, especially during that wave of 1973 and 1974, which is my book, Silent Invasion, focuses on, with some of the strangest cases on record we documented when they were occurring at that time.
Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, back in 1973, and you'll remember 1973 was the last major really national wave of UFO case in the United States. When in the fall of that year, we had a huge outbreak of UFO incidents. It was making the evening news and making the front page of newspapers for many, many days. But back here in Pennsylvania, it started the first day of the year, and continued to the last day of the year with hundreds and hundreds of UFO cases being reported. And of course, you know, I'll tell you this because it started from the time it started investigating up to the present. Many UFO cases, in fact, probably the majority of UFO cases and other unusual incidents we investigate, they may seem strange and unusual initially, but when you investigate, most are determined to be either natural or man-made in origin. However, year after year, events occur that you cannot easily dismiss. And once again, we've had some really intriguing cases even this year. But back to 1973, we had so many cases going on, and many of these were not just lights in the sky. But many of these were low-level sightings, what appeared to be physical craft, pursuing cars, hovering low over the roads, following cars, landing on different areas, just some really detailed UFO observations, which could not be easily thrown out and dismissed. But in the summer of 73, the events began to get much stranger because we had this massive outbreak of Bigfoot sightings that occurred. It started here in western Pennsylvania, and it went on for weeks and months into 1974 throughout southwestern Pennsylvania, other parts of the state, and including parts of the eastern part of the state as well. It was an incredible time to live through, and luckily, my first research group, which was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group, that was my first volunteer research group that I had set up in 1970. You may know that back in 1969, I set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. So I've had a public hotline since 1969, which I still receive calls today, and, of course, by way of email. And reports come in here constantly of current and past events and people calling in for information. It never ends around here. But anyhow, 1969, when I set up this hotline, I was so overwhelmed within weeks as people began to find out about it, then I realized this was much more than I could do on my own. So I decided I was going to try to form a volunteer research group of scientific people, scientists, engineers, technicians, people who had the background to evaluate these type of events. And it was my idea to set up some type of a quick response unit so we could try to get investigators on the scene while the phenomenon was ongoing or soon after. So everything would be fresh, the information, the evidence would be there, and we could document it. So in 1970, I founded the first group. That was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. And over a period of time, we got quite an interesting group of people. We had some of the top people from Gulf Research, Alcoa, Westinghouse, colleges. And most of these people work with me anonymously because of their positions. And with my electronics background, I set up a quite elaborate communication center in my home. I designed it.
Yeah, you had quite a little radio network that covered the whole state, I think.
Well, the group, that's when things got going, and we started out as a local group, but by 1973, the group became so well known across the state, and it turned to a point that got quite a level of respectability from the news media and the law enforcement agencies that they were actually contacting us, referring cases to us to investigate. So when this major wave happened in 1973, we had a huge input for information come in from all across the state, from a lot of the police agencies, from the news media, and we're responding to these cases day and night. And at this outbreak with these Bigfoot sightings, it all began locally. I got a call on August 7, 1973, about an incident that happened the week before July 31st. And what happened was this man... It was a warm evening. The man was shaving, cleaning up, getting ready to go to work. He always got up early the next morning, so he shaved the night before. And he was shaving as normal, and all of a sudden began to smell this funny odor. He said it was something like rotten cucumber. And he turned around to look at the window in the bathroom, and here's these two large glowing red eyes staring at him, luminous eyes in a window 8 feet off the ground. So he runs into the other room and calls some of the relatives, and they run in, and whatever was in the window was gone, but they smelled the odor. And they thought it was pretty odd that the dogs weren't barking. And anyhow, the guy had some medical problems, was taken to the hospital, and he was out when I got the call. So I called him that day on August 7th when I had to interview him. And while I'm there, I find out that a number of weeks before, some of the local fellows, the young boys, had decided to take a shortcut over to the local mall. And there was a lot of woods and brush around there at the time. And as they're walking through, they hear this noise, and they figure it's a deer, so they start throwing some rocks in. But instead of a deer coming out, here comes this very tall, large, hairy, bipedal creature with long arms swinging, crossing the road, going up this hill behind this house. So I was able to interview some of those fellas, and I got permission to go up and look around that hill, and we were up there for quite a while looking around. The ground wasn't really good for tracks, but just about ready to leave, I happened to look down, and there on the ground is the strangest footprint I had ever seen. It's 13 inches long, 8 inches wide, and very clearly defined three-toed. And the kids were all amazed, like, what kind of animal makes tracks like that? So I get on the radio, and one of my associates comes out, and we take photographs and measurements, make a cast of the footprint. And we get a radio call that one of our investigators that morning, now this is almost the Ohio line north of Pittsburgh, had been investigating a case that morning where something had looked through a window 9 feet off the ground, and the police had found some strange footprints out there. So these events went on for weeks and months. And many of these creature sightings were sometimes, as you see in Silent Invasion, some of these were multiple sightings on the same day, some almost the same time in widely separated areas, in some cases multiple creature reports, not just one. Many times there was some type of physical evidence at the scene, such as footprints, and probably the most convincing evidence that I saw, and I can tell you some of the police officers saw who investigated some of the cases, something that could not be fabricated were how the animals responded when these creatures were nearby. It was most visible with dogs, because when these creatures in the distance, the dogs would bark and go crazy and carry on. But when they would get in close range, in most cases, even the most vicious dogs were just like stopped in their tracks. They wouldn't bark. They would shake. They would cower. They'd hide in their pens or anywhere they could. They wouldn't move. They sometimes wouldn't eat right for 2-3 days later. Humans can be fooled. Animals can't. And that was something that was seen not just with dogs, but with like cats and horses and cattle that would do things differently and act differently when these things were around. And it was quite amazing. So anyhow, you know, all these Bigfoot reports are gone for weeks and weeks. And, you know, when I started back in the late 60s, I was investigating these reports of, because I had an interest not just in UFOs, but all these unusual mysteries to try to find out what was going on. And I started hearing, of course, about alleged Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania, which there was a long history from Native American accounts to articles, newspapers going back to the 1800s up to the present. And a lot of people claim we've seen these large, hairy, bipedal creatures, you know, around different parts of the state. And one of the most active areas, which continues to be, is along the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that runs from Preston County, West Virginia, through West Warren, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania. So that area along West Warren County, where I'm at, along the area out in Derry Township, not far from Latrobe, that whole general area is a very active area, especially Fayette County. Fayette County is a really active area historically for a lot of very strange reports, including recently, and a lot of Bigfoot activity. So anyhow, when I started this back in the early days, I was open-minded to the possibility that if these encounters are really true and there's some kind of a strange animal out there, very probably it's some type of unknown primate. And, of course, that was something I always kept in the back of my mind. Well, as these events in 73 and the 74 began to unfold more and more, and all these reports are coming in from widespread areas from different people, and a lot of these people initially calling the police, they were just frightened, some very strange cases came to our attention, including cases where both UFOs and Bigfoot were seen together at the same time and place. And, you know, they were amazing cases. I mean, one of the first cases was September 27th, north of Pittsburgh, where two women were waiting outside for a friend in a rural area, and they see this large, hairy, white-covered creature walking towards a wooded area. But it's odd enough to see the creature, but in one of its hands it had a small luminous globe of light that was luminous, and it ran into the woods. So they went over and got the dad of one of the girls who owned the property. He went down to the woods, and he wasn't down there really that long, and this object comes across the sky and projects a beam of light down on the woods where the creature ran into. And, of course, as you recall, because I'm sure we talked about this before, in this case it's probably the classic, and we could talk for hours and hours about this case, and it gets very, very strange. And I detailed the whole thing in the Silent Invasion book, which if people are interested, they can actually pick up copies from my website at stangordon.info or through Amazon as well. But anyhow, on the night of October 25th, 1973, during that 24-hour period that day, there were a lot of UFO cases going on around the state. But I got a call from a state trooper about 10:30 at night from the Uniontown Barracks out in Fayette County. And he had just came back from investigating this incident, which involved a UFO landing with multiple witnesses and two Bigfoot creatures in the field at the same time. And when I talked to him, he was somewhat shaken, I could say. And he said to me, he said he thought there was a good chance that something was threw up in the pasture, that he'd like us to get a team up there right away to investigate it. And a key witness was at the barracks as well, so I could talk to him. And there was enough information there to lead me to believe there was something going on. So we did get a team together. We checked our equipment out. It was quite a distance away. We got there in the early morning hours. And basically what we found out was that about 9 o'clock that night, this in this rural community, about 15 people, they're observing from different locations up there this large object about as big as a barn, like a big red sphere, ball of light, that's about 100 feet off the ground, and it's slowly moving down. And this fella and his wife, happened to be the son of the farmer-owned property up there, this main farm, was coming down the farm road, and he saw it, and he went off to a neighbor's where he get a different perspective of it, and they watched this thing look like it was coming down in his dad's pasture. So he and two local young boys decided they were going to go up to see what was going on. So he took a run over to his dad's farm and grabbed a .30-06, grabbed a handful of ammunition, which included some tracer rounds and also some live ammunition. And in the distance, as they're moving down to the farm road, they hear dogs going crazy in the distance. They hear like baby crying sounds. They hear like a high-pitched sound. And as they're getting closer, the sounds are getting louder. So they make their way up to the top of the pasture. And as they do, they're quite startled because here's this object that appears to be right on the ground or just above it. And now it's not a whole sphere. It's like half a hemisphere. It's bright white with the bottom flat towards the ground. It's illuminating the whole field, the whole area. It's making this high-pitched sound. They estimate this thing's at least about 100 feet in diameter. And they're just standing there in amazement, can't believe what they're seeing. So they're watching this thing and trying to figure out what this thing is, and their attention's drawn to a barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. And there's two figures walking along that fence in their direction. And, of course, their first thought was, well, they've got to be bears. And then the look of these things, they realize, well, these things are, one's about 8 foot tall, the other's about 7 foot tall. The largest one's in front. And they're walking one behind the other along the fence line, along the fence post. They're covered with long, dark, matted hair. They have glowing green eyes. They're making a baby, like a crying, whining sound. The arms are down almost to the ground. They have, there's a funny smell in the air, like burning rubber. And they just can't believe what they're seeing. Well, as these things are walking slowly in their direction, one of the boys at that point gets pretty upset and he runs out of the field. And the other guy's yelling to the fella, shoot him, shoot him. So the farmer fires, and the first shot is a tracer. So you just got the instantaneous flash. And he fires the second tracer. And when he fires that second tracer, the largest of the two creatures reaches out as to grab that tracer. And the moment it does that, it leaves out this whining sound, and the object in the field vanishes. Now, it doesn't lift off the ground. It just disappears. The light goes out. The sound it's making is gone. It's just gone. And the two creatures turn around and start walking back along the fence line towards the woods. So at that point, he starts shooting at these things with live ammo. And this guy's been hunting for years. And he said he remembers how he's shooting into these things. He said, I know I hit that bigger one. I said, I had to hit that bigger one. And it just kept staring at him with those glowing green eyes just staring at him. And finally they ran out of there. And they ran back to the farmhouse and told them what happened. And they got the family out of there, took them to a neighbor's, and they called the state police. So when the trooper arrives about 45 minutes later, he said, I'm here to investigate the report. And the witness says, just forget about it. You're going to think I'm crazy. And the trooper says, we had a report of two similar things, beasts up on the mountain the night before. I have to go investigate. So they go in the troop car, and they go up into the pasture. And what the trooper tells me was, over the area where the object had been on the ground, the whole area was self-luminescent, glowing, about 100 to 150 feet in diameter. The animals wouldn't go anywhere near it. He said it seemed like the temperature was a little warm inside of it, He said it was bright enough that if he had a newspaper, he could have sat down and read the newspaper from the light coming off that area. And the story goes on and on. It gets stranger and stranger. And like I said, we could talk for hours about it. And they go back to the barracks. The trooper and the witness are taken to two separate rooms and questioned. And then they call me at that point, and that's when we get our team to go up there. And the story gets stranger and stranger, but very, very interesting story. And,
yes,
you know, we've talked
about it. Sounds like maybe these creatures are interdimensional.
Well, you know, more and more cases that I had, you know, during these events of 73, that's what I talk about in the book. We had instances where our teams were out there, and we have trails of footprints that just suddenly stopped and vanished when it should have been more tracks. Okay.
We're talking with Stan Gordon here, and our time's almost up, but you're going to be at Kecksburg this Sunday.
That is all right. I'll be there both days, all day long, but I'll be there for the conference. I'll be speaking along with John Ventry, the MUFON State Director, Eric Altman, Director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, and Dave Dragason, who's also involved in the Bigfoot research. And the conference is 1:30 to 5. It is free. There's a lot of fun events all day long. There's a lot of good food out there. They can go to my website, stangordon.info. And also I want to mention, October 13th and 14th, we have the 2012 Pittsburgh MUFON UFO Conference at Westmoreland County Community College. I'll be speaking there with a lot of other people coming in, and there's details on my website as well.
Speaking of your website, I got somebody here in the chat room who wants to know if you have a sketch of those hieroglyphics or whatever it is that was on the side of that Kecksburg thing. Do you have any of those symbols or anything?
Actually, if you go to my website and click on under Kecksburg, okay, there's a drawing there by artist Dave Sankey, and there's an area there where it shows those are probably the closest, and we can't say 100%, but according to Jim Romanski from years and years ago when we first talked to him, the best that he can remember from memory, that's the closest he can recall of what he believed they looked like. So that's the best we can come up with, and it's on the website under Kecksburg.
There's a story about the Lady in White and the Lehigh River. Have you ever heard of that?
You're talking about the apparition?
Yeah. I guess so.
I've heard, you know, I'm interested in hauntings and ghosts, and I get calls on them occasionally, but there are so many people in the state that deal with that type of thing, and there are lots of reports from a lot of parks and a lot of forest areas of Pennsylvania where people claim to have seen, you know, different type of apparitions and ghosts of young ladies and whatever, so I don't know any particular one. Mm-hmm. But there's also been a lot of reports of very strange creature sightings, so if you get on my website, some very interesting stories on there.
Okay, Stan, we'll talk again soon. We're about out of time. I appreciate
it. Okay, thanks, Jared, for having me on.
And those books, give those book titles again.
The latest book is Solid Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. It's got a lot of really unusual stories in it and really mysterious Pennsylvania as well.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again
soon. Thank you for having me on.